Good morning to you. Welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Good morning if you've just tuned in. How are you keeping this Wednesday morning? Starting to fare up a little bit out there, I think. Right, we shall get on with some of your comments coming in so far on various subjects. A few on Eurovision. Hi, Greg. What's going on with that Eurovision competition? Cannot believe Ireland did not go through in Serbia, Croatia, Moldova, Czechia did. Oh, my God. Like, serious? They were horrendous. I agree Ireland's performance did not seem polished, but the song and energy in that song was good. I just do not understand the Eurovision anymore. Indeed, neither do I. Ireland is flogging a dead horse regarding Eurovision time. We binned it. It's a bit of fun, though. I know what you're saying, but... Eurovision, Greg, it's all about the haircut. And that's why, unfortunately, I didn't get through this year to represent Ireland. Okay. Keep them coming in. Let's see if there's any more on that before we move on to other issues here. Just after using the toilets in Rathmullen, says this listener, shocked at the condition, a door missing, toilet roll dispenser hanging off the wall, no toilet roll in the men's section, soap dispenser pulled off the wall, walls of graffiti, graffiti and what's looked like excrement marks on them, loo roll stuck to the roof, two busloads of elderly tourists arrived to use them, not good. Are they not new? Are those toilets not relatively new? This is one report. If you've been near them or you're close to them, let us know. Go down and have a look and report on them for us. The toilets in Rathmullen, missing door, toilet roll dispenser hanging off the wall, no toilet roll in the men's, soap dispenser off the wall, graffiti on the walls, could be poo on the walls as well, loo roll stuck to the roof, and we have two busloads of older tourists arriving to use them. If that's the case, and I don't doubt you for a second, I hope you understand when I say that, why I say it, that's shocking. Good morning, Greg. Will you ask that man, should we go back to the horse and cart like it was in his day because of car pollution? Why do the older generation always come on and try and dictate society to stay how they feel it should be? We can find research to prove any point these days. It means nothing. He needs to accept change. It's the same with the cannabis debate. People who don't drink or have never tried telling people what to do. Adults can make up their own minds. My body, my choice, only to abortions, it seems. Well, you can, but like individual actions... of, say, for instance, excessive alcohol use. It's not really... I mean, anyone can... You can climb Mount Errigal and bring a caseload of vodka with you and drink yourself into a standstill and never return. That's personal choice. I get what you're saying, but if there's 6% of admissions are to ED, if there's women and children and some men getting the living daylights beaten out of them because some people can't handle the drink, if young people whose brains aren't fully developed and whose bodies aren't fully developed are boozing, getting into cars or whatever it might be, you can't just say, you know, just do whatever you want, because if we did that with everything, society would just completely unravel, would it not? I'm putting a question here to you. I'm not preaching or saying that you're wrong. So completely liberalising alcohol laws to a moderate drinker who just likes to socialise or can go out and have a few and get up for work the next day and doesn't get hangovers, and that's grand, but it's the consequences for society as a whole that one has to consider when striking a balance in laws, is it not? A caller says, I don't believe the Americans ever landed on the moon. There's overwhelming evidence that it was faked. For instance, how was the lunar module taken out and lowered from the craft? Why did they have Michael Collins circling the moon alone while the others were on the surface? If anything happened to him, all would have died. There was no time lapse between radio communication between Houston and the moon. Who operated the camera showing the lunar module taking off from the moon? How did they time the lunar takeoff to precisely link with the command module circling overhead? Some videos of lunar modules blasted off from the moon look more like sparklers you would see at a child's birthday party, and I'm not even going to mention the Van Halen belt. NASA explained that Armstrong steered around the belt. I never realised that spaceships had a steering wheel. Well, I think they use thrusters, but I take your point. The whole episode was an elaborate hoax. It would not work nowadays. It's, do you know, obviously you've researched this more than I have, right? But all I would do is look at a picture... Right, a picture of the vessel that was supposed to have landed, or that did land. Listen, I'm not saying it didn't, and it just doesn't look like you could. It doesn't look like you could drop it 3 feet from the ground on the mountain top and it could land. Do you know that sort of a way? Greg, could you give a shout out to Oncally and Kuhn, which we have on in Century Cinemas tonight at 8 p.m. Tickets can be bought from Linra Electric Cannon. in the lobby of the cinema from 7:30. So that's handy. You can still get them in the cinema or from the office this morning or even on Eventbrite. They're only €5. So if you haven't seen Uncally and Cune, it's a brilliant film, I'm told, and you want an opportunity to see on the big screen. It's not often you get to go to the cinema and watch a film, a properly highly rated film for a fiver. So you can sport Lynn Electric Cannon, what the work they do. Get the tickets there this morning at the cinema from 7:30 or on Eventbrite. big controversy. It's a lot of discussion about the speed limits outside Maharabeg School. We had one listener on earlier in the week who said that they wanted to challenge. There's a speed van sitting there. And they wanted to challenge the fine they received because the temporary lights, it's the main road from Letterkenny to Bridge End, let's put it like that. There's a school on the side of the road for those of you from outside the area or west or south of the county that don't use that road, though I suppose many of you do. And the main road was built right beside the school. It's really dangerous. There's been so many near misses there and what have you. And some people feel that the speed van is positioned in such a way as it's easy pickings. That being said, we're talking about school children here. And we know how much we love our school children coming in and out of that school. And most people should know, I think, as you approach that, that it's a school and there's traffic there. I'm not a big fan of the speed vans and their location there. But that being said, I'm a big fan of children being alive and well. If the signage needs to be up, of course it does. But I think drivers should not have to be spoon-fed safety. I think you should know if you're a competent, alert driver that you're approaching a school there and should naturally want to slow down. So, yes, I get it. I would hate if I got a fine. I have in the past. No angel, by the way. And I never sit here pretending to be that I am. Don't preach because I'm not. I'd make all the same mistakes and do all the stuff other people do. But that school's really dangerous, and just the idea that one, and we've had it on the show 1,000 times, that one child could be seriously injured or killed over a debate whether or not a speed van is there or not. I don't know. I'm on the fence there. But listen, there may be some elements to that story that I don't know in terms of the lights coming off and on and the location of the speed van and what have you. If you've an insight into that or a view, and listen, I just expressed off the top of my head. I could be completely wrong. I'm very open to learning and having views changed and what have you. If you want to have that conversation as well, get in touch on the usual numbers. Give us a call on 07491 25000. This is your platform. Caroline and Niamh taking your calls. WhatsApps and text straight into the studio here on 086 60 25000. Okay, we had a very important conversation yesterday about the provision of cancer services and the need for further investment in the West and Northwest and the impact that is having on people's outcomes. And this is another important health story, perhaps not completely unrelated. Martin Varley is General Secretary of the Irish Hospital Consultants Association, and he's with us now on the programme. Martin, good morning to you. Thanks for taking the call.
Good morning, Greg.
Now, your association has come out to warn that the growing shortage of essential acute hospital beds and consultants across the West and Northwest region is resulting in waiting lists for treatment, and this is having an impact on patient outcomes. So run through sort of some of the realities for us, Martin.
Yeah, absolutely. Our hospital consultants across the West and the Northwest are extremely concerned that we're now looking at unmanageable waiting lists in the West and the Northwest. And there's a real concern this is giving rise to poorer outcomes for patients. You already referenced the fact that the oncologists and surgeons in Galway highlighted a problem. They're extremely concerned. There is a promised cancer centre to be developed there, but time is of the essence because of the waiting list we're seeing. In reality, we have far, far too few hospital beds in the West and Northwest. And that's actually giving rise to a situation that where acutely ill patients are admitted, where they absolutely need to be, is displacing other patients who may be booked in for cancer surgeries or other surgeries or procedures. And in fact, as we know, on a daily basis, we have a large number of patients nationally on trolleys, which is another indicator with too few beds. In fact, just looking at the figures for yesterday, there were about 140-something patients on trolleys across the hospitals in the Northwest. That's out of a total of about 650 nationally. So about a fifth of the patients on trolleys are unfortunately in the Northwest, which is high by any standards. Mm-hmm. very few beds had been put in place in the Northwest opened in the last 2-3 years, even though a significant number have been opened nationally. Only 69 additional beds have been opened in the past 3 years in the Seltzer Group. That's a very small percentage. 7% of the additional beds out of 970 opened, whereas the population in the Northwest is about a 6th or 16%. So you can see, despite the fact there's too few beds to start with, the percentage of additional beds being open is actually falling behind in the West. And this goes back to a comment by the oncologists and surgeons in Galway that they're concerned there's a two-tiered service in the country. And they were commenting on that in the context of cancer care and the fact that recovery from cancer results weren't as good as nationally. And of course, if you don't have the beds, and if there are delays, this is what happens, unfortunately. So,
Martin, before we talk about we'll get into the analysis in a moment, if that's okay, Martin. When we talk about beds, we're talking about staff, really, aren't we? We're talking, I mean, we can buy a million beds and pile them in Donegal, but they can't be opened without staff. So we're going to talk about the shortage in consultants, but is it a shortage in the right nurses and the recruitment and employment of them that's really leading at this time to the beds shortage?
Well, it's a threefold thing, really. You need the capacity in the beds and you need to start investing in that with a good lead time so you're not stuck in a situation of what we're seeing now, a deteriorating situation. Secondly, of course, you need absolutely to plan the recruitment of the staff across all cadres of staff. We have about a third of the consultant posts in the Northwest and in Letterkenny, which are not filled. Permanent posts approved, not filled. There are issues with regard to that. We're discussing with the government. We would hope to make inroads on that. And of course, our consultant numbers nationally are 40% below the EU average. Likewise, if you open additional beds, you need additional staff across the grades. We need a whole system approach that works and works.
But
well,
Martin, unfortunately, at the moment here locally, we are having consultants leaving, and they're leaving because they can't work. They can't get the time that they need in theatre, for an example, to work with patients. They're frustrated at the system. They're sitting twiddling their thumbs. So how do we attract consultants when we have consultants leaving for those very reasons? And look, at you only have to open up Google and type in Letterkenny University Hospital consultants and you will get a lot of stories that would discourage anyone from moving to this region. So without building, improving the foundations, you know, how can we truly build on that?
I think it goes back to the old adage, which I repeatedly hear about hospital doctors and consultants. They want to work when they're at work. They want to treat patients on time. So it really does go back to the capacity in the hospitals. And that has been the biggest issue that's been neglected in the last two decades. In fact, we spent a period around 2000 being told by politicians we had too many hospital beds. And as an association, we actually pointed out that was flawed logic. Now, at least the politicians have come around to recognise we need more beds. Mm-hmm. But there's a tardiness in putting them in place. And this is surprising, given the scale of the problem. And my view would be, if we were to sort out the capacity issues and some of the issues around recruitment and retention, we would recruit and we would staff.
Okay. Well, I'm very interested in your breaking this down for me, because what we are told really effectively is that a big contributor, if not maybe the main factor, is getting people out of an acute hospital. So in other words, they are well enough not to be treated in that setting. So step down beds, home care packages, family that are available to look at. So how big of an actual factor is that? So if we got that right, say there was proper investment and it's probably the easier problem to fix. If we got that right, how far would that go, do you think, to easing overcrowding in the acute hospitals?
Yeah, that's another important factor. We have 600 to 700 or 800 patients nationally who are clinically discharged by their consultants and doctors, and they're waiting for step-down facilities, maybe nursing home or, as you described, home care packages. So much more needs to be done there as well. It's a component of the problem. It'll be part of the solution. It isn't a cure-all. We still need additional hospital beds and theatre facilities to allow people to be treated on time. We know that because we have 40% fewer beds than the EU average. I'm not comparing with the best. And therefore, we have to work on the basis of the facts that we have. And this is the danger that sometimes politically they point to the solution to be somewhere else and ignore dealing with an obvious big problem. And I've been listening to that for the last decade or two, and pointing elsewhere and ignoring a crucial part of the problem doesn't resolve the overall acute hospital system. So again, let's look at the three or four or five issues and work, let's work on all of them together. Mm-hmm. Let's work at them in an optimum sense. And when we have no trolleys, or approaching no trolleys and no waiting lists, we know we're there. And we're for the moment
as the population
expands further.
I think management and politicians in particular need to stop trying to distract the public with language. Firstly, the public is seeing through that now, and I don't think it benefits anybody at all, because all the evidence is there, and we've discussed all of these problems and you're confirming it on this programme, so the public know. So there's no point politicians trying to sell the public a pup. Right, in terms of an analysis of the figures, in terms of how many people are waiting for treatments and treatments being postponed and what have you, and you know, we talk about the impact this has on people's outcomes, but it doesn't factor in often the absolute stress that people go through. I've spoken to so many people, both in my personal life and on the programme. They've geared themselves up for something. They're ready to go. They've spent 3 weeks crapping themselves just to get to this point, and pardon my language there. And then on the day or the day before, it's postponed, and it throws them into a complete and utter horrible situation. And there's thousands of people go through that, Martin, and you'll give us some idea of the numbers.
Yeah, the numbers on waiting lists in the West and Northwest has gone up by 42% since 2015. So it's a shocking increase. They've gone up by 3% since the start of this year. So we're already in a difficult situation. I don't want to be thrown out too many numbers because it don't mean much, but the increase does mean a lot. 2,850 appointments and operations were cancelled at hospitals in the centre group between December and January of this year. So that's a lot of people, just as you were describing, who were preparing for their operations, who would maybe book time off, who are making arrangements with family, and all the stress related to having an illness, and then the disappointment of the cancellation. It's very disappointing for the patients, the family. It's extremely disappointing for the surgeons and the doctors and staff in the hospital who are geared up for this and can't work effectively on a day because of the cancellation, all going back to an insufficient number of beds. Why? Because if you don't have a sufficient number of beds, acutely ill patients have to be admitted and treated, and that gives rise to the cancellations. So it's a vicious circle that's going on, and growing waiting lists as a result. So that's why we're shining a spotlight on this issue. And now the country, as we know, is in a strong position from an exchequer point of view. 10 billion of a surplus forecast for this year, 16 billion for next year. What we would be saying is fast track the plans. Let's put in place a system that gets this done quickly. And what we need is, we need to agree what's going to be funded. I think that's already agreed in a lot of cases. Put the funding in place, commit it, put a strict timetable in place and do it. And the indication from the minister and the government, and we must give them credit for this, they want to add 1,500 beds this year, next year. It might slip a little bit, but we still haven't seen the funding put in place for that. And they're saying we want to do it this year and next year. Well, without the funding in place, you can move forward. So we're saying commit that funding without delay. Mm. And at the latest by the budget in October, which of course can't be used till 2024, which means this year is lost partially. There's very few additional beds scheduled to be opened this year. There's none in the Northwest at all, to my knowledge. So you can see the gravity of the situation. Time is passing by. Waiting lists will only grow. You can try to reshuffle things a little bit to ease the pain, but you're not going to cure the problem unless you put the capacity in place.
During COVID, and I won't keep you very much longer, during COVID, we were awash with figures. How many people were dying? How many people were in hospital sick? How many people were in ICU? How many people were discharged? And we were given those figures for the most part, obviously, for public information, but also trying to convince the public of the serious nature of the situation. And yet here we are. There are hundreds, thousands of individuals and families out there that have had poor outcomes, that have lost loved ones, that have got sicker because of a delay in treatment. But we can't quantify that. You've said there's no doubt that the problems are severely impacting health care outcomes for some of the most vulnerable patients. But what does that mean? I know you can't quantify it, but I think we all know what it means. It means heartbreak, tragedy, and upset for thousands of people. But because we're not given official figures, we can't really tell that personal story to strengthen the public support for what needs to be done here. Do you get where I'm trying to come from, Martin? It's a sentence, but it doesn't have the impact it should have, because we're talking about lots and lots and lots of individuals, families, partners, so on.
True, absolutely. And I think the figures speak for themselves. You're right, we don't have exact data on serious casualties like deaths, but the emergency medicine consultants have pointed to the number of deaths to rise because of patients being treated on trolleys. I don't have the figures to hand. Only this week, the oncologists and surgeons in Galway said there's at least a 6% difference between the East and the West in terms of the 10-year survival rate for common cancers such as lung and breast cancer. So a 6% differential. And the point out that that was a drug that should be available to the West and wasn't available, everybody would be immediately ensuring it would be available. Here we have a problem because of a capacity deficit, just delaying care. And there we have the oncologists and surgeons saying it's a 6% poorer outcome, or poor survival rate. There's no doubt there are problems.
All right. So in terms of the cancer services, what they need is they need they need action. We need that to move forward. Of course, for people in the Northwest, it's not ideal that it's in Galway, but we need a model for. There's a number of them around Dublin. We need proper coverage here in the West. And in one sentence, from the consultant's perspective, the government needs to agree, which some of it has been, fund and strict timetable plans to expand our hospital capacity and consultant staffing in the West and Northwest region. We, the people of this region, deserve that. We're equal to everybody else. And I think the staff working in the system deserve to be able to do the work they do in a adequate working environment. Martin, thank you for your time. I appreciate it. It's been very important to speak to you, and very informative as well.
Thank you very much, Greg. Bye for now.
Okay. Again, let me just point out that that is not anti-government rhetoric. It's whomever is making the bloody decisions. We need to get on it. I don't care who it is, what party it is, what individual it is, but we in the Northwest and West are disadvantaged. We are disadvantaged because of where we live. Plain and simple. The facts, the statistics, everything backs it up. Taoiseach Leo Varadkar has become the latest high-profile politician to wade into the GEA Go row and called for the most popular matches to be televised free. Varadkar told the Dáil that while he accepted all matches cannot be broadcast, RTE and the GEA should allow the important ones to be seen for free with other matches available through the app. Now, this is a problem because often, sometimes, the important match to someone in Tyrone might be the one that's on GEA Go and not the one that's on the telly, because we've had a lot of football on RTE recently and some cracking hurling games on the app, but that's kind of switched a little bit because now we're going to see some of the hurling on the telly whilst some of the big games that I think all of us would like to see on the app. Pay-per-view. Can you imagine? Pay-per-view to watch football and hurling in this country. Fine Gael deputy Alan Dillon joins us now. Thank you very much for your time this morning, Alan. How are you getting on?
Good morning, Greg. We're all good. Thanks.
Right, OK. What's your take on all of this? I think the details emerging as it relates to, you know, maybe the GEA not looking at Virgin Media perhaps as another outlet for its sport, and instead sort of it and RTE coming to the conclusion that they were best in a position to provide this new pay-as-you-go service. It's all a bit messy from my perspective, but I'm interested in yours.
Yes, and thanks for having me on, Greg. Well, you know, firstly, what I feel is that we're certainly not getting value for money as TV license payers. And this has stemmed from the alarming lack of transparency around RTE's 50% stake in the GAA Go platform. And we need to establish, did, you know, RTE simply agree to keep games behind a paywall to increase revenues for GAA Go and themselves? And, you know, GAA Go, it is a private company. It behaves like one, it thinks like one, and it acts like one. And their job is to maximise profits. And we've seen in their most recent published figures that the financial statements that they raised over 1 million euros in profit in 2021. And that is even before they have exclusive rights now to GAA games like the Munster Hurling Championship, which has caused huge distress amongst the hurling community. And now we're going to see equal challenges amongst the footballing communities who, you know, in the next number of weeks will be sitting down in front of their tellies to see that these key championship games now will be behind a paywall. And that's despite RTE receiving increased state funding. They now have more sports rights than it can broadcast, and yet licensed payers are being asked to subsidise RTE further by paying for GAA sports content through GAA Go. And secondly, Greg, we also need to hear from the GAA and from the officials in Croke Park and understand, did the GAA explore other broadcasting options?
But we know they didn't, though. That's already.
I don't think I don't think we've heard that to date. I think we've heard from Virgin Media in relation to their press release yesterday, and I think, you know, it needs to. The GAA need to come forward and provide clarity in relation to the decision to place football and hurling behind a paywall, and we also need to understand, you know, how much RTE paid for the GAA rights. And that needs to be clarified, because RTE aren't coming forward with information that they say is commercially sensitive. You know, and the question that was put to the group head of Sport was in relation to the viewer numbers. And, you know, I would ask in relation to why is this commercially sensitive if RTE, how is it commercially sensitive when RTE have the exclusive rights? You know, if RTE were in competition.
And Alan, just for the listeners' perspective, in case they didn't hear that interview, he was asked during the interview ordinarily how many might watch the hurling, and he says 250,000. He was then asked, well, how many watched it behind the paywall? He said they were happy with the figures. It matched targets, but he had the figure, but he couldn't reveal it. And I think that was really quite quite telling. Let me put it to you as well that, you know, you can go to jail if you don't pay your TV license, right? We pay that, so we're obliged to pay that to RTE. We also gave 25 million euro in taxation to the GAA, not to mention everything else that we support them through paying for games that you can't even pay in cash for. And the GAA would not have that conversation, so you've no hope of having a conversation with about their rights issues, I would suggest. And also, you know, like, we're paying hand over fist left, right and centre already. Why are any games behind a paywall here? Why can't they support these games through revenue? Why can RTE not put a second game on the news channel? Like, you know, they've got other outlets that are over the air. You know what I mean? There's loads of options. The only thing that seems to be on their minds at the moment is driving traffic to the app by picking certain games and also making money, but then not telling us, even though we pay their wages effectively, telling us how much money and they're making and how many viewers are watching.
Yeah, and I think that certainly is a key point, Greg. You know, it certainly seems counterintuitive for RTE as the public state body to disregard a significant proportion of viewers who are licensed payees in favour of focusing on an app-based internet streaming platform for these types of games. And I'm sure, you know, you understand, being in Donegal and in the Northwest, that there is digital equality across the country. And without adequate broadband and streaming services, many viewers or supporters of our national games, they certainly will be alienated. And the GAA, you know, is an organisation that leaves no one behind. But in this instance, they're putting the interests of media rights and profits above what the ethos and the volunteering community organisations it is, and what it stands for, and what it continue will stand for. So, you know, given that RTE is receiving increased revenue from this arrangement, you know, we have the group head of RTE Sport on the board of GAA Go. So is the director general of RTE. So there's no question that there is a conflict of interest in this matter. And in relation to that, you know, we're being asked again, the public, to, you know, receive or to be, you know, on the receiving end of further subsidies to support RTE in their provision of GAA sports content on a platform that should be available on free to air in every living room across the country.
I mean, it's horrendous to think, is it not, that on the 20th of May, Kerry Mayo, I mean, obviously there's going to have a huge interest, not least your own in both counties, but that is a game that everyone would want to watch. Same Galway Tyrone, that's going to be a fascinating game, and you could switch straight back into sports mode and talk about those games and have us salivating at the thought of those two games. The fact that you'd have to pay to view those games and then watch it, and it's worse for hurling, watch it on a tablet or a phone if you don't have the ability to cast it up to the large screen, which is a terrible way of doing it because you're actually drawing on your internet twice, which, you know, technically is actually problematic anyway. It's just crazy that that's where we're at in 2023.
I agree. And I think that the longer this discussion is had, the more aware people are in terms of the clear sign of what direction the GAA wants to head in. And certainly, you know, as a public broadcaster, RTE have a duty to ensure that they're subjective in their nature to provide free-to-air games, and that they need to be scrutinised. And RTE know and they understand the audiences are attracted to the most competitive clashes. You know, you take Kerry and Mayo, Galway and Tyrone, the last four All-Ireland football contestants who will go to battle on May 20th. And by placing that on behind a paywall, you're disenfranchised. Mm-hmm. You're disenfranchised. You know, a huge proportion mm-hmm. of not only those who want to watch it from their own counties, but the neutrals across the country.
Yeah.
And, you know, where do we go from here if we don't stand up now and challenge both RTE and the GAA in relation to this? This is a five-year deal.
Alan, I'm sure you will. I'm sure you will, and I hope you do, and I hope other politicians do, is advocate particularly on our older generation. Who we would not be here without. They're already, if they want to go and see a game live, they can't pay for cash at the turnstile. We've spoken to many people on this programme that have to rely on a nephew or niece or a daughter or a son to buy a ticket for them. And they should not be placed in that position. And secondly, having to get other people in some cases, not all older people, but particularly to try and set this up for them. You know, after all, they've contributed not just to life, but often to the GAA, to sort of cast them to one side as if just the world's moved forward, like it or lump it. I really hope the likes of you, Alan, and I'm sure you will, and other deputies and public representatives particularly advocate on behalf of our older generation, and particularly in a cost of living crisis where they might actually have to choose food over broadband or heat over broadband. It should not be the case. We can't get the hospitals fixed with the flick of a switch. We can't get housing. But the one little bit of a respite from the stresses of life, we can fix this. And I really just hope, if the GEA and the RTE don't see sense, that the likes of yourself, with your fantastic background in sport and involved in politics, now really strongly advocate, particularly for the older generation who are being just cast aside in this whole debate and conversation.
Yes, Greg, and that's what we intend to do. And certainly, you know, this is a really concerning situation. And I think, you know, this has been in the news headlines for the past number of days, and it has no sign of easing until we actually get some resolution to the challenges that are being faced. And a swift solution is just for RTE to move some of their free-to-air games onto Saturdays, you know, with live action, I think, over the 17 championship weekends.
But put Kerry Mayo and Galway Tyrone on the news channel. Most people have access to that. Just stick those. They're staggered starts. It's a 3 o'clock throw-in for Kerry Mayo, 5:15 throw-in for Galway Tyrone. If a hurling game has to take priority on that day or whatever it might be, put them on RTE News Now or put them on TG Cahir.
Absolutely. And I remember, you know, back when I was playing, that there was no issue around the availability of free-to-air broadcasting. You know, in Crow Park on August Bank Holiday weekend, there was games broadcast on Friday, Saturday and Sunday, and there was availability across all stations, be it RTE2 and RTE News. So, you know, this seems less about fair selection and more about a bid to increase their subscribers. And that's something that, you know, the public won't tolerate, and we need to ensure that we can alleviate the financial burden on the public, as you said previously, and the importance of both maintaining, you know, equitable access to our national sports.
All right, Alan, thanks for your time. I appreciate it. That's Deputy Alan Dillon. He's a former GEA, Mayo GEA All-Star as well, as I'm sure most of you listening with an interest in that would be well aware. A Mayo legend on the pitch. Sinead, what do you think?
Oh, I'd love to really say what I think, but I'm on live radio, I better not.
Take the stabilisers off, go for it.
I think just we need to take a good, hard look at ourselves as an association. Mm. We have sold our soul to the devil, and enough is enough. I mean, I look even at my own parents, that's supposed the first thing I'm going to say. My mum was on Monaghan County Board for 20 years. My dad is a former manager of our club, committee member for decades, former chairman. He has done everything he can for his club, his county. He's gone to every game too that he could. He's now a dialysis patient. He's 76 years of age. He doesn't have the option to go to inter-county games. Unfortunately, my parents don't have broadband, and they can't watch games. I mean, I just feel we're giving the two fingers to the people that carried our association for so long. They've raised six kids, every one of whom love, well, what the GEA is supposed to be, I hasten to add, not what it is. And we don't seem to care anymore. It's just about, it's about the bottom line. It's about profit, profit, profit. And again, it comes to the same thing with only taking tickets that have been bought online. You know, where's the personal interest in this? Where's the personal touch? There is none. You know, it's shameful.
Like, absolutely, where does the shameful association want to go? Like, you know, like, there was a time in this country where we respected older people, where they were held up. Now it's like, well, you know what? We cast them to one side because we're going forward, and it doesn't matter who falls by the wayside on their way. You know, your mum and dad don't want to have to ring you up and say, Sinead, can you come over and see if you can sort this out or other. They just want to switch the telly on and watch a game, especially given what they've contributed. But that contribution, it's like they never did anything. It's like they contributed nothing. They don't matter because
they don't matter anymore. They've got us to where we are. That's it.
Okay.
Yeah, your bit's done. But we have done, or this association has done, two monstrous disservices to the elderly people in this country in the last 18 months to 2 years. Firstly, they've introduced, you know, the cashless mechanism at the gates. They won't accept cash from people who don't want to use bank cards, who are wary of it. And I'm constantly bleating on about this. Now we expect them to be tech savvy, to have access to know how to download the game and to stream it. I mean, for God's sake, like, you know, I'm young. I can do all that. But an awful lot of older people can't. You know, my husband isn't old, but he wouldn't be tech savvy enough to know really how to do all of that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, give him a piece of wood and he's a genius with it. But technology just isn't his thing. But, I mean, we just can't treat our members like this. We're alienating a massive amount of our membership by doing what we're doing.
All right, Sinead, great points well made. Thank you very much indeed for that. Sean?
Yes, Greg.
Go ahead, Sean. What's your view?
Well, my view is that a lot of the problems that exist at the moment as regards coverage of inter-county matches, both hurling and football, is that there's far too many fixtures crushed into a very small time limit. And it's nearly impossible even to watch them, even you were getting them.
That's true.
And I would have to agree in general with the previous speaker there, Greg, to you, that Sinead, that she's hit the nail on the head by highlighting the things that Crow Park have done. I think Crow Park are on a, I don't know what I would call it, but money seems to be their only problem. And while I welcome that because of the contribution they can give them back into clubs, and I know, look at the two clubs here, Letterkenny, both the, say my own club, St. Union's, and Letterkenny Gales, how they've benefited by that and by the government grants. But, you know, there's a limit. An idea of trying to put so many matches together when you have maybe six or eight big inter-county football matches at the one time.
And we're starved of sport most of the year, Sean.
Exactly. That's what I'm also was going to say. I sit back here at home for so many weekends in the year, and no sport to watch on RT. RT is not a good station to for sports coverage in general. But like, we would like to see at least matches every weekend, or not every weekend, but regularly. Another thing about the internet there, Sinead has mentioned, it's absolutely crazy and ridiculous and an insult to people, I suppose, I don't want to say, but like myself, who has given years and years and years of dedicated service to both club and county and the GA in general, to have to try to get into a match by paper only. Also the fact that there's a lot of areas in the county, in the country, that has no Wi-Fi coverage.
Yeah.
Therefore, they have no choice either to go and to somewhere they can get it, or get somebody to get it for them. And then there's, of course, people. I'm lucky enough, to be honest, that I can just about manage, and I would consider myself that great at computers or internet or digital work, but I can manage to get that. But there's so many people that just can't.
All right, you know? Sean.
And I blame this is the pressure from the Gaelic Players Organisation, who want their cake and eat it, and also to Croke Park, who a lot of them, officials up there, have never kicked a Gaelic football in their life.
All right.
And they're in there legislating for the rest of how things should be done.
All right.
It's about time they got up off the backside and come back to earth again.
Okay, Sean, listen, thanks for all your service that you've done, by the way, and thank you very much for taking the call. I really do appreciate it, Sean. Sorry, just to have to head to the news now.